Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome back to the Age of Rock podcast. Bill, Dennis, and Alan here, and we got some special guests for you. We got Denny Smith and Kenny Wright from the great band, The Great Affairs. How are you guys?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing great. You put out some new tunes recently, just a couple weeks ago, right? Is when it dropped?
Yeah, we did October 13th. Lucky awesome. Friday.
Not a bad day, that's for sure. So how's it going so far?
It's good, man. It's really good. Did a release show. That was cool. Getting out and doing a few more things before the end of the year and trying to push this thing as far as we can before we got to take a winter break. But, it's been great so far.
That's good to hear. Good to hear.
That's cool. Yeah, you're still out of Nashville?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah, Nashville's actually, I'm going down there on my anniversary, which would be November 2nd. I'll be down in town. So if you guys are playing anywhere, let me know.
I think we're playing, but congratulations on your anniversary, though.
Yeah. Oh, well,
they're playing just not in a town where
wife,
you are.
ask my wife that if it's a congratulations. Anyway, we're in the 30s. We're in the 30s now. So it's been there for a while.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the record a little bit. So this is the first records in what, 3 years? Is that right?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but you know, there was that odd little gap of weirdness that we all had to soldier through that
sure.
Slowed down a little bit, but it gave us time to really chip away at this thing. And we had a lineup change too, so that couldn't have come at a better time, I guess, technically. But 3 years, which is a large gap for us. We used to be every year or every 2 years at the longest. We're trying to do that Kiss thing. We crank out 2 years if we could, but 3 years.
Well, the unfortunate part is Kiss quit doing that, and when they did pump them out in the last couple of years, it wasn't very good. So yourselves a favor. Don't get into that habit.
Yeah. Now, Bill says couple of years, and they haven't put out an album in like 11 years.
Yeah, well, but the last couple they put out 11 years ago been whatever.
No, as a kid, I loved getting my Kiss album every 3 months or 6 months, whatever it was. And now I don't want a new one. I don't want a new one.
I don't have anything to worry about there, actually. So
they don't want a new one either.
Yeah, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. But you guys do. So. Yeah. So yeah. Tell us about the record then, everybody writing on it, full band and engaged, all that kind of good stuff.
It's primarily the two of us doing the bulk of the writing.
Full band definitely engaged in the recording process
for
and
sure.
Everything. Everybody's doing their own thing on it. So yeah, it was a group effort for sure.
Yeah. We didn't, we enlisted a little bit of outside help on this one. We had a couple of guests, keyboard piano player type characters that we had to get in, some backup vocalists. But for the most part, it's 100% the band doing everything. And our longtime producer, Mr. Michael St. Leon, at the helm once again. So he's pretty much the fifth member anyway. He's been there from the beginning. So, we don't really mess with the formula too much when it comes to making these things. We've got something that we think works, or at least works for us. So we try to stick to it.
So how long did it take you from the beginning of this new album? How long did it take to get? I know it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be an era. So just let me know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did spend, off and on about a year making it is what it boiled down to. I think once we got into it, but we did it in these weird little batches that if we had just waited and gone in prepared and done, blocked out a week and just done a week of tracking stuff and then worried about overdubs and stuff later, we probably could have done it in a lot shorter order. But the way we did it was we went in, did a few songs, put out a single, put out an EP, You know, that's the thing now. Everybody wants singles all the time. So we were just trying to keep stuff in the pipeline as we went. And eventually it ended up being enough songs that it would make a whole record. And that's when we decided to go ahead and put it out. But we did, there was a little concerted push at the very end that, man, we got to do this. We have to actually deliver a record. We keep talking about this record. We gave it a name 2 years ago. We might want to actually show up with it in hand sooner than later. So, but yeah, I mean, a year, give or take.
We also did a Christmas single in between there too. So we were sort of working on the record and then decided that we wanted to do this single for Christmas. So we sort of stopped what we were doing and just really focused on it because there wasn't a song. We just decided we wanted to do one. So we had to get the song together and then record, you know, then learn it so we could go in the studio and track it properly and not spend 3 months because we were kind of waiting until the last minute to decide that we wanted to.
Yeah, it was October when it was when it was brought up that we should do a Christmas song. So
it was done in October, so if that tells you anything.
Yeah. But
it turned out, I thought it turned out real well too. And so anyway, that was a break in the actual working on the album for that. And then we got back to it sort of. We had a lot of dates too that we had to do, and it just wasn't a lot of time to knuckle down on it. And, you know, I think it benefited overall from the fact that it took us as long as it did, because a couple of tunes on there weren't even tunes at the time. We were starting to make decisions about what was going to go on there, and then a couple of things came to light and we decided that those work better for the record. And I think that the record's better for it that we waited and let those tunes sort of manifest themselves. And so that's just my opinion.
But it turned out good. I liked it a lot. So
I'm really happy with it. Yeah. It was, I mean, the ends justified the means, as they say. It just was that last, you know, that home stretch is like, man, you just want to get it done so bad. You know, you can see the finish line. It's like that we're the ones holding this up, you know, trying to haggle over what songs were going to be on there, what songs weren't going to be on there. There was stuff that got started that didn't get finished. But, you know, once it became obvious that these are the 10 songs, it was, you know, we were pretty smooth sailing from that point on out. So, you know, I think we chose, well, you never know, you know, because the other songs didn't all get their shake, but I think we chose the best batch that we could for this. So, you know, a nice concise set of 10 that represents the band pretty well.
Of those 10 songs, are there any particular stories behind any of the songs?
Well, they've all got a story, I guess. I mean, I don't really know what they are. ask me in a year when I've lived with it, and I know what I was singing about on a couple of them, but it's, you know, it's the usual. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of underlying pandemic fatigue in there that probably crept out in a couple things, and just some stuff that, you know, there was a lot of weird relationship stuff that happened throughout the pandemic for everybody, being separated from people and weird, you know, just there was a lot of once everything, you know, kind of fired back up, there were some people that just had disappeared. You know, there were people that aren't part of your life anymore because of the, you know, there's a lot of weird, a lot of stuff the last couple of years, at least for me. I'm only speaking from my standpoint. I think a lot that informed a lot of my stuff where I was just kind of, there's a lot of things that I struggled with, just personal issues and stuff that the loss of was under the surface, but it's there and it kind of comes through more in the vibe, not necessarily directly in the lyrics or anything, but more in the vibe of the material. I think it's a little darker on a few songs.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. You wouldn't be the first guys that have said that with the COVID stuff that, you know, had some gaps between records because of COVID and that kind of stuff, that there were some, you know, it brought a lot of creativity from some folks, but it also created for some other folks, some challenges to get music together. And, you know, it kind of changed some people's trajectory just because of what they were thinking and going through at the time, so it was a little bit different record. So yeah, definitely heard that before for sure.
I felt like it just changed the palette some, you know. There were things that I don't know, shades that I probably wouldn't have painted with on other records, just because, you know, there was some darkness through all of that stuff, and I don't like dwelling on things like that anyway, and I kind of forget that the whole thing happened sometimes, but when I hear some of those songs, I remember where I was at when I wrote them and where my head was at when I wrote them. I realized that's in there. It's just not super overt, but it's in there for sure. I don't think we'll ever make another record like it again that has that undercurrent. I hope we don't, but this is the 21st century. Anything could happen.
Right. No, one thing I did like about the album again was the way you guys did it, as far as it's not a one trick pony. Your songs go from this to that to this. I mean, it's all over the place.
Right.
Which makes me happy to listen to it. I mean, it goes from something that's kind of poppy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just think we've been doing this for so long. It's like the risk of repeating yourself is so, it's just, you know, that'd be the easy thing to do, is just keep trying to do stuff in the same vein all the time. But I mean,
right.
I don't like buying, with the exception of AC/DC, I don't want to buy the same record.
If you buy AC/DC, it's got the same, it's the same kind of chord progression. It's just changed a little bit, and then they put a little different words. But they're great. I mean, it's great though.
I don't want anybody else to do that. You know, I don't want to do that. So it's because we can't do the same thing over and over again and have it be as cool. So trying to throw those little extra things in there, just little detours. I don't want to go too far off the reservation and lose people. But yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that, because that was not an accident at all.
Well, and it's the same way, like I said, I watched in the last video that we did with you guys and the interview, and it was the same deal from the last album. That's one thing I like about your albums. They're not predictable. You never know what you're going to get. Some are this kind of like really rocking stuff. Then you get this kind of laid back. You get a little bit of everything. So, you know, thank you for that. I mean, I like that. And to hear this, when I heard you guys had a new album out, I'm going, let's listen to it again. And of course, you know, my favorite song is, of course, Santa Lost My List. Because, you know what? I didn't get that damn Evel Knievel that damn year. That pissed me off so bad. I had to buy one myself when they had to do the re-release. But it's just, and you know, and I got the turtleneck. I didn't get the corduroy, but I got the turtleneck. You know, and it's like going, I'm like, you guys feel me. You know what I went through at that point. And I love that. I mean, this song is so funny. And I played it for my wife. I go, and this is my life. This is what I was as a kid. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I didn't get nothing, but I didn't get where I really wanted it at some point, you know.
I must have been the spoiled child. I got Mike Evel Knievel.
Oh, did you get one? Well,
I did.
You know what?
Yeah. Somehow that didn't surprise me at all.
This is how sad this is, Dennis. What? Me, the poor kid, even got Evel one. Knievel.
You got one. Both of you motherfuckers. You got a double one. At least these guys feel my pain. And, you know, and the Kung Fu Grip. I mean, I love that. That song was so cool. That was, I mean, it hits a genre or an era of people our age. Yeah. You know, so anyway, thank you for that.
Anybody born after 1976 probably isn't going to get most of what the reference is in there. No. But
these 1965 kids love that song.
That's all we can do is write what we know. So, yeah. And I did get some G.I. Joes, so I can't really fully bitch about that one. My mom was pretty good with the G.I. Joe stuff, but I did get hosed on that Evel Knievel.
I got the Evel Knievel.
There you go.
There you go.
He probably still has it.
He's been holding back. He got the Evel Knievel. I got the G.I. Joe.
I had the Evel Knievel. Had that, and they had a toy, too, that was like the rocket launcher that he used. I mean, it didn't launch or anything, but...
Oh, yeah, it was the sticker.
Yeah.
I had that one as well.
Yeah. And we diverse.
But you do have the Bionic Man, though. You look through the back of his head. You had the Bionic Man. I didn't get that one.
I did. Now, I did not get
you play with rocks and shit?
I didn't get that one either. Yeah. Oscar Goldman. No, I didn't. He had
the exploding briefcase that you could never get back together. Once it blew up the first time, you could never reassemble it.
I did have the Bionic, and I do definitely still have that.
There was a lot of toys in our age that didn't work out right. I had this one thing where it was like this, like a deck of a ship. It looked like this, and it had these like two styrofoam planes and they had like rubber bands and you popped them back and it was like a trigger and you could shoot them. It was the worst toy ever. Those fucking planes would not fly for shit. They were horrible. They were, it was the worst toy ever made.
But I got it. That stuff always looked so cool in like the JCPenney catalog, and then it would actually show up and you would get it and be like, oh man, what's this made out of? Like nothing durable whatsoever.
It sucked. Anyway, let's get back to your music.
All right.
Hey, talk about the first single. So the first single, Stevie, is that correct?
That'll be the next single. When Love
Is the next single. Okay.
So here's how it went. We released Strangelove first, the EP.
No, I think we did. Yeah,
we can't keep track at this point. We did.
Do you want me to show you? This is your record.
we did an EP with a different version of the song Strangelove on it. That was the first thing we put out, and that was over a year ago. And it had some remixes from the last record with the new guitar player, who's no longer a new guitar player. He's been there for, you know, going on 3 years now. But with him playing on them, Corey Rosani. And then we did a Fever Break single for Fever Breaks, which is on the record. And then When Love Is the Drug is technically the current single. Stevie will be the next single. And there's a video coming for When Love Is the Drug. But yeah, Stevie's definitely next in the queue. That'll be we're working on the video concept for that now. So
we've got When Love Is the Drug in regular rotation on A to Z Radio. And awesome. we played the Christmas song last year, and it will be in the rotation again this year.
Thank you, sweet.
Those are some fantastic songs.
Thank you, man.
So why hasn't Sleepwalker been put up toward the front? Being that's the name of the album.
Yeah, man. He wanted it to be the first track on the record, and we went back and forth about it. That was the thing too. We had a really hard time sequencing this because of the ballads. There's these two ballads that muck the whole thing up. And as much as I love both of them, it's hard enough to get one ballad on a rock record and not make it seem out of place. But when you got two of them, it's like, where do those slot in? You know, you can't have them too close to one another. So we shuffled these things around. I've got like, I don't know how many playlists in my phone that we tried different sequences, and it just ended up being that they lined up a certain way. And the record, if you listen to it, there's some crossfades where the songs run into one another, and only certain songs worked like that. So that kind of presented some, once we got those done, those songs had to sit together. So there's no really good answer for that other than, well, man, you know, back in the day, the track three was the hit. So we put Sleepwalker through. I don't know. There's no answer. I don't have an answer for that. I'm just talking in circles at this point.
No, like I said, it's a great album. I just wonder, because I love Sleepwalker. I think it's great. You know, it's a great song. And of course, and Bill's one of these people. He's always about. It's all about the listing. Bill's big on that first song he needs to hit. And of course, When Love Is a Drug is a great song. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good, catchy. It gets you staying there, for the album. Let's go with that, But no, I like your songs. Like I said, I have no problem with them. I just wonder why Sleepwalker was so buried into the album.
Remember back in the day, everyone had the classic double bass opening song. It has to be that song first. Sleepwalker is the anti double bass song. It's that slow loping kind of groove thing. It doesn't really. So maybe it was just because we didn't have a double bass song, we had to have something somewhat fast up front. And When Love Is the Drug was the only one that qualified. I'm not sure.
I'm not using double bass on the phone.
So are you guys playing, you gonna be playing some live shows here soon?
Now we've got a show on the 17th with Pat Travers in Murfreesboro. And then we go to Florence, Alabama. We're playing with a band called Light Watch. And then we have one, I think we have, all we have after that is a private event thing. And I think we're done for the year. I think that's the
Illinois. Yeah,
we were in Illinois last week. And then we'll have to start over again in January, I guess, and see what comes together. There's really, there's that weird break in the year where it just doesn't, it's just no fun to be on the road from, you know, mid-December until end of January, because it's just, you know, it's the Wild West out there, everything's frozen, and, you know, just, it's not the it's about the least ideal time for travel. Only traveling I want to do is on a plane to a beach, right, in those months. So, like, I want to go wherever Alan's at there. I want to hang out there.
Alan's in Indiana. He's just got a fake background.
He's been swimming all day in the ocean.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So are you guys going to try to get back up here to Evansville? Every time y'all seem to come up here, I have a gig that weekend and I always have to.
I had something going on too the last time you guys were up here. I wanted to see that.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's nothing on the books, but you're not the first ones to ask that question. So that would be a issue for our bass player who does most of the booking to suss out. That's the one thing the two of us don't handle is the booking. But yeah, we'd love to get back up there, man. We haven't played up there, and it's probably been a couple years.
3 years since we've been there.
Yeah.
So I think it was right around the time you were on here last time. It was, yeah, you were coming, yeah, up. It was within weeks or months or whatever. Yeah.
And something happened. I couldn't even go either. So are you guys all based out of Nashville? All you guys or not? Are you have some flying people?
Yeah. Everybody's on a different part of the out. Yeah, we got one guy in East Nashville, one guy in West Nashville, me over here on the other side, and then Matt's out in
Bellevue. So do you guys do one-offs, like in Nashville, just like, hey, we need to get together and just go out and play a little bit? I mean, do you do that in Nashville quite a bit or not?
Nashville every once in a while, and, you know, we also all do other things. Rizzo, Corey, our guitar player, plays in a Def Leppard tribute, so he plays, you know, he plays around with that quite a bit.
Sure.
And he just did a Creedence tribute. I just did they did the tribute to the Marvelous Three thing here.
That was with, I wanted to go see that. That was so good. They played all, we talked about this last time. That's why I always, your lyrics to your songs are just like Butch Walker's.
Well, I'll
remember, I told you that the last time. Yeah, and what's so funny was when you were going to have you on, they just did that Marvelous Three. I bought the album and I got they played down in Atlanta.
Yeah, I went to the first time.
Oh, you did? See, they didn't put that on YouTube. They put the second show and the third show.
Correct. Yeah.
And I had access to both of them for a week and I watched both of them multiple times. That was a great.
Man, they came to the tribute show that we did. They were actually in attendance. That we did it at Tyson Leslie put it together.
Yeah, Tyson Leslie put it together. Yeah,
and it was, you know, I don't know if you've been to any of his events, but it's all pickup bands. You know, they just ours. Luckily, Tony Higbee who I used to play with in a band called Bombshell Crush, he plays for Tom Kiefer now. He was the singer for it, so he chose his own band. So. Right. We actually got to rehearse, thank God, because I can't imagine playing those harmonized guitar solos without some rehearsal. But some of those guys did and really tore it up. But it was weird doing it with the Marvelous Three sitting in the balcony watching the whole thing. It was a little nerve wracking.
So what songs did you play?
We did Radio Tokyo.
Holy shit! Really? Give me a chill.
It was fun. It was not without its warts. We did have a few clams here and there, but it was pretty hot by the time we got to that second song. The first song, we might have plunked through a couple things, but it was fun. But then, yeah, we drove down on Friday and saw the first night, and man, it's just, you know, I don't know if they intend to continue that thing, but I wish they at the very least put out a record every few years, because that new record's great. So, and the show was fantastic, man.
I actually have a new record sitting. Where is it? Oh, here it is. Just came in the mail yesterday.
Out of the, they were delayed, I guess.
They said they didn't like the way the quality was or something, and they delayed it a little bit.
Oh.
And okay. I went ahead and, like I said, it got delayed, but I just got it 2 days ago, actually. It's still sealed. So
they had all three records at the show, but they had, some of them were in multiple colors. I mean, my life.
I ended up getting, what is it? So I bought, this one.
It's Headless yeah. Dennis.
Of course, this is the Hay. And then I've got the other one coming that has the Radio Tokyo on it. Yeah. It's in the yeah. two, that's a red tube record deal.
Texaco. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Yep.
You're like me, big Bitchwalker fan. I mean,
yeah.
How can you not love him? I mean, it's great.
First Marvelous 3 record, I didn't, you know, I've seen that guy. I've lost track. I mean, other than Cheap Trick, I don't think I've seen anybody that many times live. So, yeah, they're great.
Yeah, never.
I don't know if you saw them 20 years ago, but it was remarkable that they still had the amount of, because, man, that was a band that really, they work for their money, man, and they still got it. I was concerned for their health. I didn't know if they'd be able to do that stuff like they did, but they did their damnedest, man. I mean, maybe they weren't kicking it that hard by night three, but on night one they were throwing down. So it was awesome.
That's great. No, I like I said, my real quick story, and I probably told this before, but it, you know, I saw them on HBO Reverb.
Yeah.
I saw that and I'm like, going, that's a great, because you know, at the time the music scene just sucked. And I'm like, going, these guys are really cool. I can get into this shit. So I went out and bought, my wife bought me the three CDs that they had at that point. And I'm yeah. like, great. And then that was the very beginning of the internet. So I went on and I saw on one of their CDs, here's our fan club. And we have this website. I went to this website and it said, like, sorry, but 3 weeks ago we decided to disband the, you know, the band's not done. And I'm like, going, no, please. I was like, going, I just found the greatest band in the world and now you broke up.
Yeah.
You suck. And then, of course, you know, Bush started making his own thing and I kind of followed him, but it was never like I was really into them and they quit on me.
Yeah, they had a very unique thing, man, but they never, I mean, I saw them on that tour here, on that Ready, Sex, Go tour. They wow. played the 1029 Buzz Fest, and their gear blew up, so they only got to play for like 10 minutes because they couldn't get their amps to work, and then they played it, but they went downtown later that night and played a little place called Club Mare Bowls that was like a basement club. I don't even know, it's not there anymore, but there, man, there might have been 50 people there. They just never really got over the hump outside yeah. of a couple of big markets in Nashville at the time. You know, we didn't really have a super thriving rock scene or anything, but I thought at least get a couple hundred people in here. I mean, I could put my arms out and spin around like Wonder Woman and not hit anybody. There was just there was nobody there. So I can see why they, you know, and obviously it's worked out well for Butch because he's come under the, you know, he's produced all kinds of crazy stuff and made a lot of money. So,
well, he even said that, he goes, you know, I toured my ass off through, you know, the band he had earlier. And then also, yeah. you know, with Marvelous 3, he goes, I never had a pool until I started producing and writing music.
Yeah.
He goes, that's yeah. when I got a pool. That's when I got the big house. That's when I, yeah. you know, Avril Lavigne, people like that, that's who paid for his, what he needs to have now. But anyway.
Even an album track on a Pink record pays better than playing the 50. you know what I mean? So yeah, he's been all right for himself. I mean, he's got a beautiful place out in on the outskirts of town here now with his studio, and it's amazing. So yeah, I mean, good on him. I don't know what those other guys do, but they've obviously kept their chops up because they played their asses off. So
but to bring it around though, seriously, I've always, and I said it in the last show, your writing of your lyrics remind me of a lot of Butch Walker, and that's why I like you guys.
Well, we're both big Elvis Costello fans. I think that has a little bit to do with it. In fact, when I first got the first Marvelous 3 record, I thought, man, there's how many Elvis Costello songs did he borrow for this? Because he clearly was enamored with him too. So there's a lot of common ground, but I'm sure I've ripped off plenty of stuff from Butch Walker in the years since. You know, it's hard not to. You know, only steal from the best, as they say.
So do you guys play on some of those Rare Hair things that Tyson does?
That was the first one I played on. Corey's played on a couple of them. Matt's played on a couple of them. He did the ballad night. They did
Reason to Live, I think. Didn't they do Carry by Europe too?
Oh, he was supposed to do Reason to Live. And
yeah.
They
changed him. Yeah.
Up. Yeah, he got
those things are there. There's so many players that it gets kind of jumbled up sometimes. But yeah, he's Matt's played on a couple of them. Corey's played on a couple of them. That the Butch Walker Marvelous 3 one was the first one I've ever done. So, but man, a lot of it's most of those players are shredders. I'm not a shredder. So if I got asked to do it, I'd be like, well, can I just play rhythm guitar? Because I don't want to have to learn any of those guitar solos, man. That's heavy lifting. So, but yeah, they're great. Those events are fantastic, man. The song lists are always cool. The players are top notch. The drummer from Hailstorm sang two songs at the Marvelous 3 thing. I didn't even know the guy could sing, and he was great. He was a better frontman than most of the other guys that were there that do it for a living. So it's a cool event. Tyson really does a great job putting those things together. You should check one out sometime if you have a chance.
Now, Tyson, we've had him on the show actually, and we met him at the Rockin' Pods, and they usually put something together for that, you know, that event also. So yeah, he puts together stuff that you wouldn't believe. You know what I'm saying? It's like it would be hard to do that. Put all these players and it's like we're gonna play this song. Okay, boom, we played it, you know.
I'll tell you how frazzled the guy was at the Marvelous 3 thing. When I got there, we were about 30 minutes late, and we got in, and we had to drop our guitars upstairs, and Jeremy Asbrock had just got done playing a song with Tyson and a couple other people, and he looked utterly deflated when I walked in the room, and I said, what's going on? He goes, well, we just played a song with no bass in it, and I was like, what? Tyson was supposed to play bass on the track and totally forgot. And they started the song and they're all looking around like, who's playing bass? And no one was playing bass. They just played the whole song without a bass guitar. Tyson just flipped his mind, I guess. It's like, I mean, when you're coordinating 100 players to play, you know, I can see where that would happen, but yeah, they didn't want to lose the momentum. So they just played through it without a bass on the track. So yeah, it's too much for me, I can tell you that. That's like spreadsheets and shit. I can't work with that kind of
thing. I mean, originally, I've seen Tyson do that before. And, you know, he does a really good job of putting these things together. But you're playing three albums from front to back. I mean, that's players. Sorry.
You're trusting these people to show up and be prepared. And, man, you know how that goes. That one of two ways. And there were... There were a few people that were a little loosey-goosey, but like I said, with no rehearsal, I felt pretty good about how I learned the songs, but until I got to Tony's house to actually run through them a couple times, I didn't know what all the things I was missing or that I had learned differently than, you know, somebody else was playing it. So I don't know how those guys get up there and do that stuff cold, just walk up there, plug in and play. And that's what it is, too. It's not your gear. It's a strange bunch of equipment. You just show up with your guitar, your bass, or your drumsticks, and you get up there and do it. That's a tall order, man. Like you said, three albums. And they did all the outtakes, all the B-sides and obscure Marvelous 3 songs that I don't even know if Marvelous 3 remembers recording. So they played everything. There was a lot of material. I wouldn't want the job of coordinating that stuff. There's no way. We can really coordinate it by getting ourselves to a gig on time. And, you know, we're an actual band. So, yeah.
We got to get him to figure out a way to do that on not a Tuesday or a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, he does it during the week because
I know exactly why.
Just guys are all on the road. Yeah. You know, it's like otherwise he'd have half the cast he has probably. But yeah, I'm with you. It was I had worked a warehouse gig that day and barely got home and showered before I had to be at that thing. He's like, you need to be there at 6:30. I was like, that's just not. I'll be lucky if I get to my house by 6:30 and then all the way to the other side of Madison. But and I was not the only one. There were people, you know, running in there to play their slot. But I can't imagine you'd have half of those because, man, there's some hot shit guitar players that I know are on the road every weekend probably that would not be available for those things on a Friday or Saturday.
I look forward to going to that. And I heard it was like midweek, and I mean, I could have made it down there, but it was just like, it's 2-hour drive for us to get down to Nashville to just get to Nashville. Then we got to get to the venue itself whatsoever. It's
2 hours of Nashville traffic when you get there. So, or it could be.
And it depends, you know, hell, I could hit something, you know, north of town and I'm screwed at that point. But yeah, it's just hard. I wish I lived in Nashville because all these midweek stuff like that. I mean, Tyson puts together some really cool stuff. And there's other
he's got a Desmond Child one. I think I don't know if Desmond Child's actually going to be there because I know he lives here in town, but it's a night of Desmond Child songs. Wow. So sure, there'll be a bunch of Kiss stuff and Bon Jovi and all the, you know, he's got his name on everything. But
right.
I just read that book.
You read it?
Yeah, I did. I just read it. I just finished it. Yeah.
You read a book?
Yeah. Yeah, dumbass. I read books. I can read.
I'm just fucking with you.
I read that kind of stuff. That's the stuff I like to read. I don't like to read fiction and shit like that.
Did it have any pictures in it or anything?
It had a couple of pictures in it.
Okay, it had a couple. Just make it sure. Yeah. Just make it sure.
It had actual pictures instead of pictures. It has pictures.
Our print version.
Pictures.
Yeah. Yes, a printed version, hard copy, autographed. Yes.
Wow. I'm impressed now.
But it was very interesting. It was really more about his childhood and that kind of stuff, and then, you know, how he got into the business and things like that. But yeah, that'd be cool, really cool to see. They did a thing in Greece or Italy where he did a show there, and I can't remember exactly which country it was in. I'm thinking it was at the Parthenon, but I'm not sure. Greece, but
that too. Yeah.
Yeah. It looked really, I mean, there were some pictures of it and stuff like that, and they put the set list in there, and I was like, wow, it was very, very impressive.
And, well, he's got an office here on Charlotte.
Yeah, it's like walking distance from my house.
It's like right by Kenny's place.
Oh, really?
And it's an old bank. He bought an old bank, and I think the recording studio is in the basement or in the vault or something, maybe. He's got this setup in there that he's converted this thing into, and it's the Desktone. So he's been here for several years, man. I don't know.
He's been here for well over 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of it because he had a house there for a while that it had a name, and it's in the book, but that got sold and he rebought it back, I think, once or twice because it was something that just really meant a lot to him. And it was very interesting how that whole thing worked out. But yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, I would probably figure out if he did a Desmond Child thing, I would probably figure out how to take off and buzz down and go to that because he's done some amazing work.
Yeah, it's with him, you never know who's going to show up for that. Because he'll probably be there if it's a tribute to him, I imagine. And that's normally what he does. Like he did the Michael Wagner, and Michael Wagner came out and got to hear all these, you know, bands play stuff he had produced. So I'm sure Desmond will be there for that. But I mean, who knows in Nashville who could show up to that, you know? To play that thing. I'm sure there's plenty of people here he's written songs with. So yeah, I'll probably check that one out too.
All right. So now we talked about everybody else, but you guys. So what? You got some new songs?
We started there actually. What I'm saying is
are you working on some new songs for another album?
Jesus.
Okay.
I don't even want to think about that right now.
Too far ahead.
You're done.
We had 50 songs for this thing, so we've got plenty of stuff left over if we want to do it. What I'd like to do is as this thing, you know, moves along, is maybe do some like B side. Like we put out another single, I would like to put some B side stuff on it. Like maybe go in and finish these songs that didn't make the cut and add those on there, just a little extra value add for people, kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, as far as doing another record, we've got a whole bunch of boxes of vinyl to sell. In the meantime,
You have vinyl to sell?
Oh yeah,
I want one of those.
Yeah, oh. Dennis, you need to friend the great affairs
so
on
now.
You.
No, I don't. I don't want you. I don't want you to send me one. I want to buy one. Where do we buy those?
Go to the website. They're available right there on the website, greataffairs.com. Click over to the merch page, and you will find it.
Doing it right now.
I'm doing it right now. Actually, I'm gonna pause my.
But yeah, I mean,
we're getting a break.
we gotta get out there and pound the pavement for a while. I guess that's the first order of business to see if we can move some of these things. But I don't know what happens after that. You know, there's always going to be more songs. At least I think there's always going to be more songs. You know, as long as there's people to listen to it.
That's a challenge of getting it out there, right? You know, you got guys like Alan, at least, that's got a internet radio show to find that stuff. But getting stuff on the radios, I mean, what radio are you going to get it on, right?
there's really not much left outside of that. I mean, if you can get somebody, you know, you get an Eddie Trunk or somebody to pick up your song and play it twice is a huge victory. Right now we're trying to work on getting overseas distribution, get our international distribution thing lined up. And if we can make that happen, that presents, you know, a few extra opportunities we didn't have previously. And it also takes a lot off of our plates, man. Trying to be the one-stop shop for all this is not, you know, the DIY operation is great when it comes to, you know, counting the money at the end of the month, but all the stuff that goes into it, I would much rather have somebody else packaging stuff up and shipping it out. I don't like standing in line at the post office. I'm happy to see the stuff moving, but you know, that's a lot goes into it. Those first couple of weeks when a record comes out, they hate me at the post office. I mean, they hate that you walk in at just a long time and there's only one person behind the counter and you've got 30 records in a tub. I know I'm not their friend anymore, you know, and I got to keep going there all the time. So I actually split the batches up between different post offices this time. I would go to one, I would take one batch and there I would drive 10 minutes to the next one and do it. It just was easier that way. I felt so much less guilty dropping that stuff off. But
did you give the guys a free album though to say, listen, this is what I'm sending out. Take a listen to it.
Nobody that I have talked to, I have never picked up on any of these people would be interested in anything that I am putting in these.
All right. But, well, you know what? I just bought your album. And it's very reasonably priced. And it's coming to, actually, it'll be Kelly and Talbot because it's through our PayPal account. So it'll be, but it's me. It's not Kelly. Right. It's me. I bought it.
All right.
I love that. I want vinyl. I need more vinyl, but anyway.
Well, that, you know, that's an addiction, man. I own a record store too. So that's a problem for me. I had to years and years ago, I had to make myself stop buying stuff.
Oh, wait, you own a record store in Nashville?
In Pekin, Illinois.
Oh, I'm going to say if it's in Kentucky or in Tennessee, I'm going to be down there. We're in Illinois.
In Illinois, it's right on the other side of the river from Peoria. Been there. It's called Co-op Records. There used to be a whole chain of them. There were maybe 20 of them at one point. There's only two or three of them now, I think.
Oh.
But I have to make myself not. I do the new releases every week, and I see stuff, and you know, that Marvelous 3, that Hey album has come out in three different colors. I've had to make myself not buy all three. I don't need three different iterations of that album. Well,
see, I'm the same way. I don't do multiples, but I did buy the Kiss a lot, or what was it Dress to Kill, the red version of it before COVID. There was only 500 copies made.
Yeah,
I have one of those.
See, that kind of stuff, as long as you keep it sealed, it's an investment. You can just tell yourself
it's not sealed though. But it was just cut open. But I can still get $700 for it. And I put it out there and nobody wants it. So, you know, because everybody's kind of going, I'm not gonna be that dumbass that does that. I mean, I'm looking for the dumbass.
I bought the big killers. It was very limited too.
I've got three copies of it. I don't need that copy. If somebody wants to give me $700 for it, I'll give it to them. I don't give a fuck. I'm done. Anyway.
Yeah, I suffer a little bit from that. Not to the degree that he does or you do, obviously. Even that Marvelous 3 show, I would have walked out of there with every single one of those records, except we waited. We had balcony seats, and by the time we got down to the merch line, it was so long at the end of the show, because I didn't do that. Okay, we got to hurry and beat traffic. I stayed till the very end of the last note of the last song, and by then it was just a sea of humans, and
it was bad. I'm sure
shirts flying everywhere, and people buying everything they could, and I was like, I'll order it online. I'll buy it from the website when I get home if they still have it. So
I'm hoping that they will do a DVD of that because they filmed it really nice on the thing. it's multicam. It's really done well. All they got to do is just take that thing that, you know, that I got for my buying the live stream, and put it on a DVD. I'll buy that in a heartbeat. Seriously.
Were the Chicago shows filmed too?
No.
It was
night 2 and 3 of the one in Atlanta. They didn't do night 1. They did 2. And actually, I like 2 better than 3. 3 was 2 was 2 is better.
Well, they had different. We didn't get any guests the night that we saw them. There were no special guests that came out and played with them. So you get to those shows. They had the clown that Puddles or whatever.
Yeah, Puddles Pity Party was on number 2, which was really good. Actually, he did Under Pressure, and he did a really good job of that. Okay. On the third night of the ones, they had the guy from Collective Soul come out and do
Shine. I heard somebody else say that
Shine.
Yeah,
it was it was fucking horrible.
Really?
It was bad. I mean, the guy looked like he was like 90 years old. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the guy was that old, but it was bad. I mean, it was really bad.
I don't think he is. I think he's only in his 50s, maybe. But
but he looks old. I mean, and he sounded old. He was like, I don't know if he was fucked up, whatever, but it was bad. Anyway,
well, no, that
night 2 was good. So
they're an Atlanta band, and that's the first time I ever saw Marvelous 3 live was opening for Collective Soul on the Hey Al. And I remember that show specifically because they brought Butch back out at the end and they did a U2 cover. And if I had been in Collective Soul, I would not have wanted Butch up there because he schooled them hard. Like he threw down. Badass, man. And he's a far more powerful vocalist. So it really, really showed during this particular song. But yeah, so apparently they've been friends for a long time. I did not know that it was a lackluster performance, though.
But being that the bass player, his son was out there, he is super talented.
Yeah, he's a star.
It made it a really good night. Anyway, love that show. But I tell you what, I do love your album too. I love your album a bunch.
Already plunked down the money on it, so we got
there. You go. So where else can everybody give us where will you buy this stuff and move it around?
I mean it's everywhere streaming wise. It's there's no where you can't find it. Every single service has it. I mean, I'm sure that iTunes can be found. If you can find your way to iTunes, you could actually download it from there, or Amazon Music if you wanted to actually buy MP3s of it. But as far as getting the CD or the vinyl, right now, the only places you can get it are from us directly at thegreataffairs.com, or there's a company called Cool Cat Music, KOOLKATMUSIK. Yeah, so I'll saw it cleverly, Cool Cat Music. They have the CDs. They're handling the international stuff now since we don't deal with that stuff. But that's it. I mean, that's the only place you can find it right now, unless there's a store that has. We've shipped some to a few stores, but that's it. The vinyl is only through us. So I will personally package this and ship it out to you tomorrow, first thing.
I got it. It's Kelly Talbot will be.
I'll put a little extra love note in there for Kelly.
I appreciate that. Give her a little. She needs it. Give her a little love.
I've got some Polaroids I've been sitting on. I'll slide one of those in there.
Please do.
All right, fellas. Thank y'all for coming on the show. Everybody, AidensOfRock.com. Check out past episodes and social media links. And until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.